For some reason, God wanted us to hear that passage twice today, which is okay. It may be more important to us than we realize. I did not look at the lectionary for today when I was preparing this. After Diane had called, she mentioned the fact that she was thinking about doing something on the road to Emmaus and with those two travelers. And so I thought that was probably the lectionary, and I just went ahead and did whatever I wanted to. And something I've been thinking about of doing in recent weeks. It is interesting, all the little pieces that we collect along life's way. Sometimes there are those pieces that we can use sometimes. Sometimes they just sort of hang around, or we've tossed them aside or whatever, but sometimes they come to meaning for us at a certain time in life. And that's sort of what's happening with what I'm going to share today. And you've got to stick with me. I'm going to tell you a few things, and then I'll work down to what I really want you to hear and to understand that I think God is speaking to us. As I've said, I'm a product of Sunday school. That's where I started going to church, was in Sunday school. Eventually, and I have no idea how long it was, eventually, pardon me, I started staying for worship also. Now, the singing became the primary reason for that, the making of a joyful noise in the service. I enjoyed the songs and hearing them sung and taking part in them. I am one who has no musical training whatsoever. I couldn't even tell you, if you picked a note and said, what note is this? I have no idea. I do not even like my own voice sometimes when I'm singing, but I do make a joyful noise and try to join in and follow. Yet, can you believe that I was asked at one church where I was to teach the preschoolers in Vacation Bible School the music? They needed someone to teach them the songs that they wanted to share. And also at another church, I led the music during revival. We had a speaker coming in from the outside, but no one to lead the music. And guess who? There were some of the songs I'd have the pianist play through them because I didn't know what they were. I had no idea what they were going to sound like, but we made through them. Before I retired, Kim asked me to make a list of the favorite hymns, and she was asking me this morning again, what's my favorite hymn? And there's a bunch of them. There was about 38, I think, on that list that I gave Kim about 18 years ago. And she used all those hymns in the month of my retirement or right before I retired those years back. I discovered that as I was making that list and the hymns that I was selecting related to my life and where I was at certain times. Certain churches, certain times, certain periods, these were the hymns that were meaningful or popular during that time. Where I was, what was happening, what I was learning. And it's a little bit like Alexander Pope once said, to err is human, to forgive is divine. But then James Brewer Calvert at Decatur has modernized that a little bit. And he says, to err is human and shows management potential. Because when we err, what? We may try again, or we may do better, or do something different. That didn't work. Ralph Smith, who was the minister years past, also at Decatur First Christian, I was minister of education under him when he was senior minister there, and he would always say when I would meet him after I had left and gone on to other things, he would always tell me, you taught me a lot. Well, this guy was older than me, had more experience than I did, and I said, how does he get this mixed up? Because he taught me a lot more, I think, than he had learned from me, but that was always the way he said it. But he also describes the pastor. He says the pastor gets invited into the highlights and lowlights of people's lives. And they're there to help, and this is what he uses, They're there to help hatch, match, and dispatch. Now, you see, think about it now. We're usually there when the births come, or you let us know that you have a new baby. In years past, after a baby was born into the congregation, on the communion table would be what? A rosebud in a vase, symbolizing that life that had come into our midst. And ministers join lives together. When we first opened this building, we became a wedding chapel. I don't know if many of you know that or not, but we had people stopping, just coming in off the street, asking. We finally had to develop a wedding policy and rent the building out for weddings. I have no idea how many we had during those days.
You and I spent many weekends together.
I'm sorry?
You and I spent many weekends together.
We spent many weekends, that's true, weekends together doing weddings and sharing those moments, how special they were. And ministers not only perform the weddings, but also they are called to help mend lives also. When there's a breakdown or miscommunication or whatever going on, there they are again. See, the hatch, the match, and the dispatch. We're present quite often for those taking that last breath. A last breath on earth, followed by the first breath in heaven. We've listened, we have prayed, we have been with people, we have been with family. So the hatch, match, and dispatch has some meaning for us. Paul Tillich, a theologian from my younger days, that it's been a while since I've read him, he wrote a book entitled The New Being years ago, and he says in that, "We want only to show you something we have seen and tell you something we have heard, that here and there in the world, and now and then in ourselves, is a new creation." Now suddenly, we are becoming new, the minister or whoever's in that particular situation, and sometimes for you also, you're becoming a new creation. You discover something new and different, and see it in a new way. Tillich also says the word resurrection is not a good translation. Really, we ought to talk about the new being. And you think about Jesus Christ, and he became a new being, didn't he? That crucifixion, that coming back to life, the empty tomb. And here is this new being amidst the disciples and their relationships with one another. And I found that for myself, it is true also. You've heard me talk about those decade sermons of I just became and whatever age, whatever decade I'm entering into. And I've recently, in recent years, begun to alternate that I am becoming. See, we're always becoming a new being because we see things differently. We understand them differently at different ages and different times in life. And what is coming to us. When something is distorted and bent, sometimes things are strained and bruised. And in those moments, that distortion and that strain and that bent, God can fashion something new and wonderful. He takes that bruised and that distorted and that broken and that bent, and it becomes a new being. God is the very ground of our being. God can take the old and make a new. And you see what I'm leading up to, I want you to think about music. We've sang some hymns, you remember the words, and I mean, you may not remember right now, but as you go back sometimes to those hymns, the words, the phrases are there. You don't realize sometimes the impact they have on your life. Now, the reality is, for me, and this is where I was in life, in 1989, remember those years, First Christian Church made a decision that it was going to relocate. We had been on Perry Street for a number of years. We had 0.65 acres of land. 0.65, now not 65 or anything. And we were landlocked. One was a house on one side, and they didn't want to sell. The house on the other side was expensive. The lot behind us was like $500,000 that they were wanting for it. And so the decision to relocate, and these 5 acres here on Houston Road in those days, Sugarloaf was a dream for the future. It wasn't there. And we bought the 5 acres. It really was a horse farm at one time. It has a house on the back. It had a pond about almost this side of the one that's out there now, but it was much smaller than those days. And the state made us do a bigger one because we were going to have drainage a little quicker, and you have to do the 100-year flood or whatever. There was an electric fence around this part of the property to keep the horses on the land. My grandmother, on my father's side, was a Houston. So the road, Houston Road, was probably named after some ancient kinfolk that I have. I have no idea who it was. There were 5 and 10 acre lots on both sides of the road. This way, the next lot was empty. There was a house on the next one. You had to go 3 lots this way to get a house on the back of the property. Nothing here. 25 years ago, we move into this building. We'd spent about a year, year and a half in that wilderness journey from the old building to this one. And I can remember I never talked about it, but at those times I wondered, how do we make this place holy? How does it become that place we left to have that type of meaning for us in life? How does this become a holy place? We worship here. We dedicated it. Very special service. We moved in December, and it was sometime in March that we had the dedication for the building. Now, I begin to realize, as I was leading worship and hearing the songs and hymns that we began to sing, how they related, for me at least, to this place and the meaning it began to have. One of those hymns in our hymn book is "In This Very Room." There's quite enough love. There's quite enough joy and hope and power. Lord Jesus is what? In this very room. And then there's the Spirit song. Let the Son of God enfold you. The Spirit, like a dove, will descend upon your life and make it whole. Come and what? Fill your lambs. And we're those lambs. And we're standing on holy ground. There are angels all around. Let us praise Jesus now. A sweet, sweet Spirit in this place. Stay right here with us, filling us with your love. Wonderful words of life. They teach us faith and duty. Surely the presence of the Lord is in this place. You can feel his mighty power. Now, you know, back there above, we're standing on holy ground. There are angels all around. And now, as we are surely in the presence of the Lord, can you feel the brush of the angel wings? Are they touching you somewhere on your arm? There's glory on each face. Fill my cup, Lord. I lift it up. Seeking things that cannot satisfy, draw from my well that never shall run dry. Sounds like the lady at the well, doesn't it? Come and quench this thirsting soul of mine. Bread of heaven, fill me till I want no more. Fill it up and make me whole. One bread, one body, one Lord of all, one cup of blessing. When you do this, and it's even on Remember Me, and it's even on our front of our communion table, and we eat and we drink. Come share the Lord. Come take the bread. Come drink the wine. Come and share the Lord in those moments. Here I am, Lord. Now, this song was written in 1981, according to our hymn book, but it's one has a meaning that I have had to deal with all of my life. A song not that old, but it is new in a sense. Is it I, Lord? I said, that's what I've had to ask myself. I have heard you calling in the night and in the day. I will go if you lead me. I will hold your people in my heart. Now, you don't know these things, and I'm not sure that even my family knows, but there were times when I was questioning, after 2 years of college and struggling to make grades in those 2 years, I began to wonder, is this what God wanted me to do? Do I drop out of college, or do I keep going and keep trying? And yes, I made that decision. I had a summer program. I went through at Peachtree Christian Church, and yes, it began to be something I wanted to do and felt like I needed to do. And again, and when I finished seminary and had a call to a new church full time, and again making that decision, do I go? I had accepted their call, but also I went ahead and looked for a job in the area and found one. Is it I, Lord? And Betty and I talked again, and we decided to go ahead and give it a try. I will go if you lead me. I will hold your people in my heart. Give thanks with an open heart. Weave us together in unity and love. It is well with my soul. Let there be peace on earth. And then that last verse in our scripture passage this morning that we've heard twice now, and here it is the third time at least, they devoted themselves to the apostles' teaching and fellowship, to the breaking of bread and the prayers. And that's the reason this has become a holy place for us and for other people in our community. Now, I was sharing with you that poem earlier. I go to sing, and she gets to the point, I get comfortable, get focused, get seated, get saved, and in a sense we are, aren't we? It's the singing, I go to sing, she says. It's the willingness to stand if you're able, the common agreement on the page number, the voluntary sharing of songbooks with people on your row, even ones you rode here with. But most of all, it's the collective in-breath before the first sound is made, the collective drawing upon the grace of God, the collective, if inadvertent, admission that we are all human, all fragile, all in need of the sustaining air freely dispensed, all in need of each other to get the key right and not sound discordant. It's the hidden life celebration in the act of making a joyful noise all together. We don't even have to sound that good. Singing it together still brings home the we-ness of worship, the not aloneness of life in God, the best of all we have to offer each other. When we're singing, I think that I might actually be able to forgive you for being terribly human, and you might be able to forgive me for being so terribly not there yet. And we might be able to find new peace now and not postpone it for some heavenly hereafter, but live and breathe it today, drawing in the grace of God, voicing our need and hope and gratitude and longing. When we are singing, I can feel the better world coming. And if I get to be a part of it, you do too. So sing with me and we'll make our way down that blessed road together, collectively better than we ever thought possible. By Lindy Thompson. We're going to sing, I Love to Tell the Story. Now, as we're singing this and thinking about it, you see the title, How Would You Tell the Story? Now, you've heard my story. How would you tell it? What God has done for you and to you over the years.